Hello, my name is Cynthia Ng, and thank you for tuning in to Awani Review. Joining me today on the show is Reza Razali. He is the founder of Terato Tech, a mobile app development company. But some of you might know Reza as the person behind the Kita Jaga Kita platform. Now, Kita Jaga Kita was launched during the white flag movement in Malaysia at the height of the lockdown, the MCO. What it does is it connects people in need of help, in need of food aid assistance, directly to people who wish to help. And this is done by pinning a white flag on the platform itself. So Reza, can we start with that? Because that was such an interesting initiative. Malaysians were very eager to help during that time, but because of the restrictions in place, it was a bit difficult to give assistance directly to people in need. So at what point did you decide to take matters into your own hands and start the platform?
Sure. The credit to Kita Jaga platform should be given to my team members. They started it. They came up with the idea, if I'm not mistaken, on the 2nd of July. Back then, there was already the white flag movement happening on the ground. But we thought that it's going to be challenging if someone were to put the flag up physically. It's not something that's easy for one to do. So being a tech company, having been developing application the last 13, 14 years, we thought, why don't we bring this to digital? So on that Friday, Achan, Hisham, Bashirun, and Edo and Zara decided to do a weekend hackathon. So from that Friday to Monday, they work on the hackathon. And on Monday, we went live. On that first day itself, we had about 20,000 visitors. The next day, we had 200,000 visitors. And then by the third day, I think we had about 500,000 visitors. So the response was amazing. Normally, a hackathon project is just something that you do as a proof of concept. But for us, it's a weekend project that turned out to be a full-time job right now. So very interesting.
That was what I read. And the speed of which the project was conceived and then launched is quite astounding, done over a weekend. How did you mobilize your team to get it done so quickly?
Sure. I think for us, we have been building application using maps, using location-based technology, using mobile app. That's something that we've been building the last 13 years. So the muscle to build the application and the processes is something that we know and we have in-house. So I think that's the reason that we've been able to use to put our skill set to good use very, very quickly. Because that is also the process that in the tech community, you have the concept in which you build MVP, minimum viable product. So you build a product, test it fast. If it works out, works out. If it doesn't work out, you do an iteration from there out. So I think those are how we bring those tech values into mobilizing a project like Kita Jaga.
What was really encouraging to see that people stepping up to address shortcomings in assistance to those affected by the pandemic. What was great about the platform is that you have a wealth of data on people needing help and people wishing to help. Can you talk to us about what did you observe during that time when you ran the platform in terms of the needs of people in the country at that time?
Sure. I think in July, we have about 90,000 flags on the platform. So what was interesting is we do not run... we work with several parties that was looking on the data. So for example... based on the survey that we did, about 48% of the requests on the platform was fulfilled. So if there were about 90,000 flags, I think in the month of July, about close to half was fulfilled by the community near to you. That was what we indicate. We also indicated that initially there is a ratio in certain areas. The ratio is there's going to be one person who wants to help versus three that needs help. But in certain communities, the need is a bit more... there's a lot more needs in certain communities. So for certain community, it goes to 1/7, 1/11. 1/11 is the largest ratio that we saw on the flag, right? So what we've been able to do, if we've been able to see which area has the highest concentration of flags, which area has repeated requests of assistance and things like that. And also, we also now know, based on the map, the concentration of where most of the requests are coming from as well.
And how have you been able to use the data apart from allowing people to match the needs and people who wanting to help?
So for us internally, Currently, we have been looking at the data. We have been looking with, we have been working with several civil societies that's looking to extract the data and put it to good use. We are open to work with anyone that will need access to the data. So in fact, I forgot which civil society work with, but they extracted the data and they were able to put it to good use. We also work with government agencies like Zakat Penang, Perkeso. I think they reached out. They wanted to see how they could offer help to those who might need assistance, who might qualify for assistance from the other agencies as well. Yeah.
I think what was great that is just to see how the tech community also stepped up, you know, to put their brains together and to mobilize something so quickly. Okay, now that the lockdown has eased, the economy has opened up, do you see the need to continue the project? You know, has the project waned in terms of momentum?
Sure. I think it's a good thing that there's lesser flag on the platform, right? We still recorded about 5,000 to 10,000 visits a day now. We still do. But the number of flags has went down. But I think it went down to about 100 a day now, total. So went down massively, right? From initially, but we had in one of the days, we had 20,000 flags a day. So that is a good sign. But also what's worrying is in certain areas, the requests for assistance by ratio has went down, in which probably before this, there was a lot more people that's willing to help in certain areas. But now those help are no more incoming, right? So that is also a worrying trend. So what we are looking to do with the platform is we wanted to see if we can use this tool to be able to notify the civil society, offer this help to people who might still need it, right? Because what we look as well, what's been challenging is the ratio of the those who, in term of the ratio who wants to give help, back then in Klang Valley it was 1/3. Right now it's 1/11, right? So for every 11 requests, only one wants to give help. But the advantage that we have is we are able to reach out to who wants to give help and notify them that they might want to open up Kereta Jaga and check out that they are those around your area that still needed help.
Right. So Kereta Jaga Kita was the first initiative, peer charity platform of sorts. I understand that your company is also working on this different campaign. It's called the Purple Flag Movement. Can you tell us about what does it hope to achieve?
Sure. What we discovered as well when we started the campaign, we saw there's a lot of volunteers that's excited to go around and help the people that raised their flag on Kereta Jaga. So what was one of the things that we wanted to solve is maybe if someone does not have much experience in giving this aid to people, they might not be able to do it safely, right? So following SOPs and also to ensure their own personal safety. So for us, safety is a key point that we want to address on the platform. We want to make it a lot safer. So what happened with the Purple Flag Movement is, if let's say you have something that you want to give to people around you, you just put your flag on Kereta Jaga, and you put the purple flag on Kereta Jaga, and we will have a third party that will reach out to you and pick up the item from you and send it to verified recipient, right? So of course, there were also some suspicious activity that was happening on the platform. So by doing the purple flag movement, the idea is we can do a lot of this activity a lot more safer following SOP and a lot more for the personal safety of the giver as well.
I believe that when you first started this thing, it wasn't your plan to, you know, continue this as long as it is now. I think initially it was just from your desire to help out people who have no access to assistance. So what's then, you know, do you plan to continue this, or do you see the potential of P2P charity ecosystem in Malaysia to keep continuing to encourage Malaysians to look out for each other?
Sure. We saw maybe because of the economic opening that has been very good for a lot of people, But of course, there are some pocket of society that still need help. So we will keep running the platform as long as we can. Of course, the number of flag has went down, but as long as we saw from our data, there's about 100 flags that's being raised every day, and in certain areas are showing a higher ratio of flags compared to other areas. I think, and when we saw this data, what we do is we actually go and reach out to civil society in certain area to ensure that how can we work with you to ensure that it's delivered. So that's why from our end, we've also worked with a lot of NGO like ICLAS, Global Sedekah, to ensure that certain areas, if they need help in, let's say, in Sabah or in a certain area, in certain areas in town, your aid, instead of you giving the item, it can also be channeled through these other NGO partners that we have on the platform. Because for us, we don't process this transaction. This transaction will be processed by our partners. We are just an intermediary, a P2P intermediary to connect donors to the giver. Donors to those who need, yeah.
Yeah, I have used the platform. I think I have managed to send out like 20 or 30 packages to people. Some even came in from Sabah because as a donor, you can also put up a flag, right? As you help. So I think what was wonderful is that that many of those people that was impacted by COVID-19 may not necessarily be on the government system, on ICASE. This could be migrant workers, undocumented people. So for that, I mean, I just want to say it was such a great initiative from your team. So thank you very much on that. I understand that you guys are running a NFT campaign on your platform to promote charity through gamification. Yes, this program might run after the event, but can you talk to us about this initiative and why did you decide to bring NFT on board?
Yeah, from our end, being a tech company, we have been we have been building blockchain applications since early this year. So we just find a way to another proof of concept, right? So that's what we like. We did a hackathon, and then the team members decided that this might be a good way to see how we can use NFT for good, right? So we can give a carrot if you help a few flag on Kita Jaga, you would be rewarded with an exclusive NFT. So this is really one kind of NFT lah. One, if you have it, only you have it. No one else will have the same NFT. Yeah. So just sort of a POC kind of thing that we do at Trato.
Okay, and this is for the Purple Flag Movement.
Correct. Yeah, to encourage people to give. Yeah.
Okay. So if anybody wants to participate in this movement, how can they do so?
Yeah, how they can do is you can raise your purple flag on Kita Jaga. You let people know what you have available that you want to give out, be it food, clothing, or other items. And what will happen is the purple flag team will reach out to you and will pick up the item from you, and they would be distributing it to verify to those who have been verified to really need the items near you, right? So you still be able to assist those near you, but in a safer way.
Right. Okay. So that is on Kita Jaga Kita and Purple Flag. And thanks for those insights there. I would also like to talk about what you do for a living, which is Terato Tech. As long as I remember, I think working with Astro Awani, Terato Tech was one of the startups that was really active involved in promoting the tech community. I think this is back in 2008, 2009. I think we had you on our show so many times on Awani. Talk to us about Terato Tech now. No? How has it evolved since you started? I think it was media, mobile gaming, and now food and beverage. Talk to us about that journey.
Sure. I think when you are in the tech business, you are in the business of innovation, right? So you can't stick to one thing for too long. So what we do now is at Terato, we are in the business of building new ventures. So one of the ventures that we spun out of the company in 2017 is a company called Silent Moods Number Heart. So that is a point of sale system. So that business has done quite well for us. We've been able to grow our revenue consistently from 2018 till 2020. We just finished our fundraising on Pitchin last month. We raised close to 3 million ringgit, and then we have a lot of interest from other market as well. Alhamdulillah, locally we are used by Petronas petrol station, close to 900 station nationwide. So that has been a good thing for us. We've been able to build very, very stable enterprise grade application, process a lot of transaction at Petronas fuel station, and we have a lot of interest from a lot of fuel retail user across in the market like North America and Middle East and Europe. So that is very exciting for us, right? Because at Teratur, although we've been in the industry for quite a while, one of the challenges we have been too focused on the local, on Malaysia for quite some time, right? I think for us, it's the right time for us to try and venture beyond Malaysia to be able to provide more employment opportunities to more Malaysians.
What point did you decide that, hey, this you are ripe, the company is ripe to expand abroad? Because you mentioned something that is very much discussed in the tech community, is that Malaysian startups may be too myopic, focusing on the market. But over time, we have seen so many Malaysian companies who are able to make their mark abroad and have achieved quite commendable success. Talk to us about that journey. You know, what's next for Teratur Tech?
Sure. For Teratur, it's about building new ventures. So we are looking at the space of building blockchain application. That's an area that we are focusing on right now. Because I think we have figured out the model. We have successfully spun out Slurp as a company, but the challenge about going out, I think the biggest challenge is the mindset, right? You have no exposure. You have no friend that has done it. So you might be afraid to do it, right? But I think being in the tech circle last few years, I've seen so many successful Malaysian entrepreneurs which has given aspiration on how you can go out the right way, right? You can always go out and do business, but to do it in a way that's not too capital intensive, and to make sure that you do it sustainably is very, very hard. So I think having a lot more Malaysian company that does that right now has given us the inspiration and the framework of how we should approach this.
That's amazing. Okay, I want to just go back a bit to talk a bit more about Slurp. What I understand you mentioned is a point of sale system, a cloud-based point of sale system for operators as well as fuel retailers like Petronas. How has it been for the company? Because I understand the F&B industry has been severely impacted by the pandemic. And what about to Slurp? What has been the impact? Or has it been positive or negative throughout the past 1.5 years?
Sure. I think for us, it has been very, very hard. We have, when we look at our numbers, during the peak of the pandemic, a lot of merchants' sales were down on average 95%, right? So that was during the peak. But these days, those who are still around has been able to reopen and recording close to pre-pandemic level. So I think that is very, very, very encouraging. For us, I think, I believe the F&B business, the SME will bounce back after the pandemic. People are starting to realize that digitalization is something that they need to do, right? Digitalization does not mean that you need a website, you just need social media. Digitalization also means that you need to automate and modernize your operation. And that is where we at Slurp comes in. We help you make your operation we help you modernize the operation of restaurants. Yeah.
I think one of the main advantages, say, of a cloud system like yours is that it allows you to have real-time insights on sales, inventory, patterns and trends of customers. How has this features helped your merchants, especially now having to bounce back from the impact of the pandemic? What do you see will be the future of the kind of services that you offer and how it would help this operators?
Sure. I think what is important now, retailers need to realize that you need to depend on multi-channel, right? I think that's the most important thing that we learned from this pandemic. Before this, you thought that you can just depend on just walk-in traffic or dine-in traffic. That was what they depended on. The pandemic shows that you need to expand to third-party delivery providers as well, and then you need to also invest in your own delivery channel as well. I think that's important. I think the key lesson here is business need to be ready to operate in omni-channel, multi-channel businesses.
Slurp is not just providing point of sale system. I believe that you have expanded into many different verticals. So moving forward, how is Slurp planning to provide better integration, better customer profiling, even to help restaurants understand and know what customers really want?
Sure. In terms of our front, we have provided numerous enhancements to the platform. We have better analytics. We also have our own online ordering system in case you restaurants wanted their own. And of course, to our even affected customers, we have been able to waive the fees. If the shop were not open during the pandemic, we were waiving the cloud fees as well to see if we can assist them. But the thing about being in software, right? I think what is key is you need to always update your application, and you cannot do everything on your own. So I think from our end, what we have learned from Kita Jaga, partnering with other startups in the field of ordering, in the field of inventory management, is also very important because as a tech company, because you thought you can write similar kind of codes and what other people are offering, but then if you don't have the domain expertise, whatever you wrote, whatever you build, it's not going to be as good as someone that's just focused in that one area. So from Slurp, our idea of growth is to partner with a lot more partners, integrating a lot more partners to the platform to provide value to our customer.
You mentioned learning just now about how you've learned from running Kita Jaga Kita. Just want to get your thoughts about the past half years navigating through the pandemic as a startup. How has the journey been for you? What are some of the lessons that you have learned over the past year leading through very challenging times?
Sure. I think we never had a time where we put all hands on deck every single day for a period of 3-4 months, right? So that is how we operate during the pandemic. We were constantly looking at our numbers on weekly basis. What is good about but the lesson we learned from the pandemic is one could not afford to be complacent even when things is a lot better now. I think that is one thing. And then you need to always listen to what your customer needs. You always have to listen to your customer. Always listen to their feedback. I think that's very important. And also you need to look at what your peers in the industry is doing. So if those are the features that you don't have in your service, in your offering, that's something that you should neutralize very, very early, right? Because during the pandemic, it's a level playing field for everyone, be it you're a large company, small company. It's about who execute the best. But also I think another thing that is important to us is during the pandemic, we get distracted. We try to do a lot of things, right? So that is also a challenge. I think although there might be a lot of opportunities, but it's best for one to just focus on what do best. You cannot spread yourself too thin. I think we learned our lesson as well. We tried to do a lot of things, but eventually a lot of that other things dies off post-pandemic. Yeah.
Right. Now, can I understand when you started Terrato, this was when you were 25?
Yep.
25, it was a company of 2 people at that time. And how big is the company now?
The Terrato and Slurp, we are about close to 90 people now.
Wow.
Yeah, so we've been very happy. We've been able to provide close to 90 employment to people around Bangi. Because I'm from Bangi, so I'm very happy to be able to do that. Yeah, but of course, I think what you're also from Bangi.
Bandar Baru Bangi.
All right. Cool.
Well, it's great. I have been following your company's progress since, like I said, when I started in Awani, it was back in 2008, 2009. What has been the biggest challenge for you? You have been a strong advocate for the startup community, and to see where you are today obviously is a great success. But what more do you hope to see for the Malaysian ecosystem to grow further?
Sure. I think it's important to, like I said, right? We wanted to go to expand beyond Malaysia just because we have seen some peers doing it successfully, right? And so I think opening the mindset of Malaysian companies to scale globally is important. But of course, the infrastructure to do this might not be readily available right now. Readily available in terms of we do have very helpful officers from MIDA or MATRADE overseas, but they might just be focused on what Malaysia do best, right? Our oil and gas, our rubber or palm oil, our manufacturing. It's time to maybe look at how we can offer a bit more support into getting Malaysian tech company to go global as well. I think there has been some attempt. I think MDEC has done some program, MAGIC has done some program, but what we need is maybe a bit more push towards that area, right? I think find a playbook that has worked from other trade development agency from other countries, and let's see if we can implement that in Malaysia, because I think we can do it. We have enough talent here in Malaysia, but then we just might not have the exposure and an ecosystem that could help towards that is all we need, I think.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Reza, for speaking with me, and I'm really excited to see the progress and success of Slurp. And with that, I'm wishing you the best of luck, and thank you for speaking with me and coming on the show.